This afternoon's portion of the meeting is going to focus on the functional roles of nuclear organization and epigenetic processes in mechanisms that control cell fate, our lineage specification, and cell identity. Our first speaker is Allison Muatri. Sorry, that's not right. Allison's an assistant professor in the Department of Pediatrics, Cellular and Molecular Medicine at UCSD. He did his PhD at the University of Sao Paulo in Brazil and then did a postdoc here at Salk. His talk's going to focus on the role of L1 retrotransposons in neurological processes and disease. So Allison, thanks very much.
Good. All right. Thanks, Luke. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for the invitation to present the work here. And I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of the discoveries that happened actually here at the Salk while I was a postdoc. And then at the end, I'll show you some of the recent data produced by a grad student in the lab, which is a little bit provoking and will change this idea of a somatic retrotransposition in the brain. But let me step back and introduce you to the team. So I was actually working with neurostem cells in the adult brain. And those neurostem cells can be found in a region called the hippocampus, where is related to learning and memory acquisition. And one can actually isolate these neurostem cells and plate them in culture. And under FGF2 conditions, they will proliferate, and you can expand those cells. And as they do in vivo, where the progenitor cells will migrate and will differentiate into neurons, those cells in cultures, if we withdraw FGF2, they will do the same. They will differentiate into neurons. So I was interested in how these cells are committed to this neuronal lineage. And by doing like some kind of gene expression analysis, we find out that there is an upregulation of line retrotransposons while these cells are committed to the neuronal lineage. And for those who are not familiar with line retrotransposons, let me introduce you to a draft of the human genome. And you probably all know that a protein or coding sequence represented probably less than 1% of this of the human genome. And the vast majority of the human genome is actually consequences of this activity of jumping genes or mobile elements present in our genomes. So this is actually 50% of the genome, and the line retrotransposon, or the type of jumping genes I'm talking about, it's called a long interspersed nucleotide element 1 and represents 17% of the genome. They are not located in a single region in a specific chromosome. It's always spread out. The line 1 is actually the only element that is still autonomously active in the genome. So it's able to mobilize itself and to jump, to produce a copy and paste of itself in a different region of the genome. So to really monitor if this is actually active in the brain, what we decided to do was to generate a transgenic animal, and we engineer one of these active line elements to carry indicator cassette. And this is just the representation of the indicator cassette. It's the EGFP gene, but is interrupted by an intronic region in a way that only after the reverse transcriptase, the intron will be spliced out, and you can see the cells glowing green. So the entire animal have this construct, and only cells that support line retrotransposition will actually be EGFP positive cells. And we started looking for different tissues in the animal, and was quite easy to find EGFP positive cells in the brain, but not in other tissues. So it doesn't mean that it's not happening in other tissue, but it was just more frequent in the brain. So this is just one example of a cell in the cerebellum. So you can clearly see that the cells express GFP. And again, express GFP because it has a somatic de novo insertion, a mutation in the genome caused by a line retrotransposons. There are other cells, they are basically everywhere, and most of the cells that we find in the brain, they co-localize with a marker called NUN, which is a neuronal specific markers. So all these cells that support line retrotransposition are basically neurons. And we were really curious to try to understand, I mean, more about the molecular mechanism regulating these line retrotransposons during brain development. And we decided to first study a little bit about the promoter region of those elements. And I have represented here one active line element. So the basically structure is about 6 kb, and it contains a 5 prime UTR region driving the expression of two open reading frames, ORF1 and ORF2. And ORF2 is a very important one because it has two domains. At least two important domains. One is the endonuclease, which is responsible for nicking the DNA so the retrotransposon can actually insert back into the genome. And the other one is the reverse transcriptase. This is all RNA-based, so it's not a really copy-and-paste mechanism, but you produce an intermediated RNA level that would be reverse transcribed before getting back into the genome. So by looking at the 5' region, what we detected is that it contains several CPG sites. And for those who are familiar with epigenetics, CPG sites, when methylated, they can attract methyl-binding proteins. And perhaps the most famous member of this family is called MECP2. And MECP2 is a methyl-binding protein who actually, when mutated, can cause Rett syndrome, a very dramatic neurological disorders. So we ask if MECP2 can actually occupy the promoter of the line element, and we did that using chromatin immunoprecipitation. So what this gel shows here is that MECP2 is actually associated with the line promoter. But if we treat the cells with 5-ASA, which is a global demethylating agent, removing all the methyl binding into the DNA, there is no signal. The signal is lost, indicating that the association with the promoter is methylation dependent. This goes really well when we try to measure the activity of the line promoter using different cell types. So we cloned the line promoter driving luciferase, and we tested in MECP2 knockout cell lines, which is the white bar here, and we compared to white type siblings. So these are neuroepithelial cells isolated from the MECP2 knockout animal. So it's highly expressed in the absence of MECP2, especially in comparison with wild-type cells. And you can suppress the activity of the promoter by ectopically expressing wild-type MECP2 back in the cells. Again, this correlates really well with the amount of line that's being expressed in the cells. So this was measured by qPCR. In MECP2 knockout cells, you have lots of line expression compared to controls. One can silence, one can suppress line expression by putting back MECP2 into the cells. So what about in vivo? Can MECP2 regulate line retrotransposition in vivo? So to do that, we backcross our transgenic line with the MECP2 hat, hoping to have the transgene in a MECP2 knockout background so we can compare. And again, what I'm looking here as a readout is the number of EGFP positive cells because we have this indicator cassette here. So this time, what we decided to do was to see the brain as a whole. So we generated this three-dimensional model using virtual reality. And what we have here is a representation of two brains. One has MECP2. The other one is depleted of MECP2. And every single green dot that you see in these models represent a neuron that contains at least one round of retrotransposition. So it's pretty clear that the number of green dots that you see in the absence of MECP2 is quite higher compared to controls. But not only that, I mean, I highlight some regions here, such as the olfactory bulb, striatum, and cerebellum, where there are more retrotransposition going on, three to six times more compared to controls. So these regions are regions that are highly affected in the MECP2 mouse animal. Also, I mean, when you fly through this brain, you see lots of clusters of neurons that are EGFP positive cells. So to me, this is a representation of the fact that there is one daughter cell that contains the integration, the somatic mutation. And after cell divisions, this was passed to the daughter cells. So it's a clonal event, suggesting that the brain, as develops, accumulates the somatic insertion. So we are all genetically mosaic in regards to our neurons in the brain. So is this only a mouse phenomenon? Can we see that in humans? So the way we did that was to take advantage of postmortem brain tissues, brain and heart from the same person, and we compare Rett syndrome individuals and controls. And we see a higher number of line sequence in Rett syndrome brains compared to the rest. So just to summarize the model right now, what we think is going on is that a repressor complex in neurostem cells, you don't want to create lots of somatic mutations where the cells are reproducing. You want to keep them silent. But as soon as the cells are committed to the neuronal lineage, the chromatin will relax. We expose this the line promoter to neuronal activators, and they are now producing lots of RNA. This RNA can be reverse transcribed and inserted back, creating somatic mutations. Lots of those mutations are going to synaptic neuronal genes. We don't know exactly why this is happening. So I want to now tell a story about Charlie Thomas, who is a grad student in the lab. And one of his questions was, what happens to the cell when we have lots of RNA coming from line retrotransposons? And we got some insights by studying a very rare type of neurological disorder. It's called Aicardi Goutieres syndrome, AGS for short. And this is a very dramatic neurological disorder. It's kind of caused by an auto-inflammatory process that makes the neurons in the brain just die. And it's caused by mutations in this protein. It's called TREX1. So just to summarize, TREX1 is it's an important protein that it resides in the cytoplasm, and it's there to degradate or to attack single double-strand DNA or single-strand DNA, probably coming from a viral attack. So it's there to protect our cells. But for some reason, it's causing this autoimmune disease as well. So to help to explain this, we propose the following hypothesis. So what we think is going on is that in unaffected cells, you have TREX1 in the cytoplasm, and as soon as it recognizes RNA coming from line retrotransposons, we'll degradate those RNA or reverse transcribed single-strand DNA. In the absence of TREX1, you have an accumulation of single-strand DNA coming from this reverse transcriptase, and that will cause an inflammatory response based on interferon activation. So, unfortunately, there is no mouse model for AGS. Don't take me wrong, there is a mouse model, but the mouse model does not recapitulate the neurological problem. So there is no other way to study that except for a human model. So we took advantage of iPS disease modeling, and what we did was to reprogram cells from AGS patients and controls, and we also genome editing some control cells to carry loss of function TREX1 mutations using CRISPR technology. With these cells in hand, we can now generate neuroprogenitor cells and then astrocytes and neurons. So that's our model right now. So the first thing that we decided to look was, can the TREX1 negative or mutant cells accumulate single-strand DNA in their cytoplasm? And there's an easy way to do that. There is a very specific antibody against single-strand DNA. When you do that in normal cells, you have a couple of dots in here, but in mutant cells, you have lots of dots. Most of them are kind of around the nuclear membrane. One interesting thing is, if this is really coming from line, one should be able to treat with reverse transcriptase inhibitors and get rid of those single-stranded DNA. And that's exactly what we did here. So in the mutant cells, we treated with RT inhibitors, and we remove this single-stranded DNA from the cytoplasm. We did that not only in neuroprecursor cells, but also in neurons and astrocytes. And here comes the second surprise. The numbers of single-stranded DNA in the cytoplasm of neuroprogenitor cells and neurons are quite similar. But when we did that in astrocytes, we saw that it's 20 times higher comparing to other cell types. So for some reason, astrocytes can cope with this high amount of single-stranded DNA in the cytoplasm. Is this really line retrotransposons? So we take advantage of this fraction of single-stranded DNA, and we use our qPCR primers to quantify the number of line elements in these cytoplasm fractions. And we see that in TREX1 mutant cells, we do have a higher increase of line elements hanging around in the cytoplasm. So if astrocytes can support high amounts of single-stranded DNA coming from lines, will there be an activation of interferon alpha response? And one way to do that is just to measure the amount of expression coming from interferon-stimulated genes as a response to this autoimmune damage that's going on in these astrocytes. And the truth is that this is just a panel of some of the interferon downstream genes, and we have some of them, or most of them, seems to be highly upregulated compared to controls. So yes, they do have this auto-pro-inflammatory response. So what happens to a neuron if they have lots of line elements? So what we see is something that's very similar to what happens in the patients. Those neurons just die. It's actually very hard to keep those neurons alive. And this is just one representation of neurons. The red here, they were stained for markers for apoptosis. And you can see that there are more red into the mutant. Another thing that we did was, can we collect the conditioned media from the astrocytes of TREX1 patients and treat human normal neurons, and what happens? And we see the same level of mortality. So we have two phenomena going on here. The neurons per se are dying, but there is an additional effect coming from the astrocytes that enhance the neuronal death from these neurons. The good news here is the fact that one can actually treat those neurons and astrocytes with reverse transcriptase inhibitors, as I mentioned before, reducing the number of line expression, reducing the number of single-stranded DNA in the cytoplasm, and attenuating the immune response. By doing that, the neurons survive. It's quite impressive, actually. Also, treating the astrocytes with reverse transcriptase and then using that conditioned medium to treat normal neurons, we don't see neuronal death anymore. We can rescue that not only at the cellular level, but also at the molecular level. This is just a panel of gene expression where we measure the amount of important genes for neuronal function, such as synapsin 1, and we can rescue that with reverse transcriptase inhibitors. So I'll finish here. By showing my take-home message, so I hope I convince you that there is plenty of evidence that the brain is actually a genetic mosaic. This has obviously some implications for genetic non-heritable conditions such as autism and schizophrenia, but also for individuality as well, since this is happening even in the normal brain. There is a repressor complex that keeps line retrotranspose on silence in neurostem cells, and this is probably guided by MECP2 and DNA methylation. And TREX1 deficient astrocytes will have an increase in line expression and single-stranded DNA in the cytoplasm that will trigger a pro-inflammatory response. And the good news is that reverse transcriptase inhibitors is probably beneficial for patients with AGS and other autoimmune diseases as well. So these are people in my lab, and I would like to thank especially Charlie Thomas, who was behind all these data that I show you so far. And I'll be happy to entertain you with some questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Allison. I think we have time for a few quick questions. Yeah.
Fantastic stuff, Allison. So what the role of this or the function of those mutations? My question is, each individual mutation is a somatic, is not can it be passed on the germline.
Right.
So you can probably adapt the level of MECP2 or the level of transport of the jumping event, but you will still get different mutations every time. So what kind of areas in the brain where the neurons are, you know, hippocampus is not actually one of those surprisingly areas where L1 jumps. What the particular area in the brain where jumps happens, and why introducing certain randomness in those particular neurons, not other, would be any beneficial?
Yeah, so this is just speculation, right? I mean, we don't have the answer. To really answer your question, one has to attenuate line retrotransposons in the brain and see if there is any consequence for the individual. So what I'm telling you right now is pure speculation. We don't see a specific region in the brain where this seems to be super hot or is really prone to retrotransposition. In the MECP2 background, there are some regions, as I show you, like olfactory receptors, hippocampus is another one. we think that this is happening because these are regions where there are constantly turnover of cells, or there are neuroprogenitor cells there, so they just accumulate those insertions. Is there any somatic beneficial for the animal or for the individual to have the somatic insertions? We don't know. We know that they can be controlled by some environmental factors. For instance, if you ask those transgenic animals to do voluntary exercise in a running wheel, you increase the number of retinal transposition in happening in the brain, specifically in the hippocampus.
But they increase also the level of neurogenesis. So whether the increase is proportional or disproportional, like it's an excess of the neurogenesis, or just because there's more neurons, you have, of course, more jumps.
Yeah, it is really well correlated. But also what we find out is that we do see other EGFP-positive cells in non-neurogenic regions, right? And our explanation for that is that those insertions were there before, but for some reason with exercise or some kind of stimulus, those regions were open again. And that may, it's a gene trap system. That may indicate that that region of the genome start to be expressed again. Why this is happening, I really don't know.
Last question, it doesn't happen in the immune system.
It doesn't happen. No, we look for that. We haven't seen that.